Osho, Tao, the Pathless Path, Volume 2. Talks on extracts from the Lita Zoo, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 3.
In the Middle Age, Hui Tzu of Yang Li in Song lost his memory. He would receive a present in the morning and forget it by the evening, give a present in the evening and forget it by the morning. In the street he would forget to walk, at home he would forget to sit down. Today he would not remember yesterday, tomorrow he would not remember today. His family were troubled about it, and invited a diviner to tell his fortune, but without success. They invited a shaman to perform auspicious rites, but it made no difference. They invited a doctor to treat him, but it did no good. There was a confusion of Lu, who, acting as his own go-between, claimed that he could cure it. Hui Tzu's wife and children offered half of their property in return for his skill. The Confucian told them, "This is clearly not a disease which can be divined by hexagrams and omens, or charmed away by auspicious prayers, or treated by medicines and the needle. I shall try reforming his mind, changing his thoughts. There is a good chance that he will recover." Then the Confucian tried stripping Hui Tzu, and he looked for his clothes. Tried starving him, and he looked for food. Tried shutting him up in the dark, and he looked for light. The Confucian was delighted, and told the man's sons, "The sickness is curable, but my art has been passed down secretly through the generations, and are not disclosed to outsiders. So I shall shut out his attendants, and stay alone with him in his room for 7 days." They agreed, and no one knew what methods the Confucian used, but the sickness of many years was completely dispelled in a single morning. When Hui Tzu woke up, he was very angry. He dismissed his wife, punished his sons, and chased away the Confucian with a spear. The authorities of Song arrested him and wanted to know the reason. "Formerly, when I forgot," said Hui Tzu, "I was boundless. I did not notice whether heaven and earth existed or not. Now suddenly I remember, and all the disasters and recoveries, gains and losses, joys and sorrows, loves and hates of 20 or 30 years past rise up in 1,000 tangled threads. I feel that all the disasters and recoveries, gains and losses, joys and sorrows, loves and hates still to come will confound my heart just as much. Shall I never again find a moment of forgetfulness?"
This is one of the greatest parables of Lita Zoo. Pregnant with profound significance and insight, based on a great experience of the inner world of consciousness, paradoxical but indicating something absolute. Let us go into it very softly, delicately, carefully. It has much to give to you. It has much to show to you. It can become a great clarity on your path. Before we enter into it, few paradigms of Taoism which will be helpful. First, Taoism believes that the memory is the problem. Because of the memory, we are not really alive. The memory holds us back into the past. It never allows us to be in the present. It is a dead weight. And it goes on growing every day. Every day the past becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. Every day more and more experiences, more and more memories become accumulated and they hold you back. The child is free. He has no past. The old man is not free. He has a long past. The child has nothing to look back. The child has everything to look forward. The child has only future. Just opening. Great adventure. The old man has nothing in the future. All has happened. And all that has happened goes on cluttering his mind. It is a weight that pulls him down backwards. It does not allow him to move with the time. He lags behind. Memory is how you are rooted in the past. Unless you become so free of the memory that you need not look back, that memory no more disturbs you, that the memory no more clouds you, you will not be able to live in the present. And if you cannot live in the present, the future is not yours. Because the future is contacted only through living in the present. The future becomes a reality only by living in the present. The present is the door. The future enters in and the past goes out. If you are looking at the past, you will miss the future, because the same time you are looking in the past, the future is entering in the present, and you cannot look both the ways simultaneously. You have eyes to look forward. You don't have eyes at the back of your head. Nature had never intended you to look back. Otherwise, eyes would have been on the back of your head. Nature has intended that you should be looking forward. Nature has not given you any instrument to look back. So when you look back, you have to turn back. And in the same moment, when you are looking back and your head is turned to the dead past, the future is turning into present. You will miss that birth. You will always miss the future turning into present. And that is the only reality there is. Now what happens? If you are too much interested in the past, too much attached to the memories, you start creating an unreal future too, in imagination. The man who is too much attached with the past projects a future also. He lives in the memory, and through the memory he creates imagination of the future. Both are unreal. The past is no more. You cannot again live it. There is no possibility. That which is gone forever. It is impossible to bring it back. Because it is impossible to bring it back, you start imagining a similar type of future. Something alike. A little more decorated. A little more good. A little more sweet. you start imagining a future, but that future is based on your past experience. On what else it can be based? You had loved a woman, everything was good in the woman, something was not good. Now you project a dream. In future you will find a woman who will be as good as the past woman, only with those wrong habits deleted, only with those wrong habits dropped. You will have a house as beautiful as the past, more beautiful, only with few things which were not in the past. You will manage in the future. Your imagination is nothing but a modified past. This is how people are living. The past is no more, and the future is again nothing but a desire to repeat the past. Of course, in a better way, but it is the same past. You had eaten something, you like to eat it tomorrow again. Yesterday you loved a man, a woman, tomorrow again you would like to love a woman, a man. You want to repeat. The mind is a repetitive mechanism. The mind continuously hankers for the same. And the reality is every moment new. It is never the same. You cannot step in the same river twice. The life is constantly moving, changing. Only change is permanent. Everything else is changing. Only change is not changing. That is reality. But then you create a false pseudo-reality of your own invention, fabricated in the mind, manufactured by your desire, and you start living in that. Taoism says, to be in the reality, a man has to come out of his mind. A man has to become a no-mind. To be in reality, a man has to uproot himself from the past. One has to forget the past, to remember that which is. The eyes have to be completely unclouded from the past. Only then you can see in the reality. Eyes clouded with the past are eyes blind. You are not really blind, just clouded by the past. You cannot see directly because so many screens are covering your eyes. Those screens have been created by the past. A man insulted you yesterday, and you come across him on the road. Again the past arises. A screen falls on your eyes. The same man, this man insulted you. You have to take the revenge. You have to pay him in the same coin. Tit for tat. You start getting angry in a rage. Now you are missing this man. It is possible that this man is no more the same man. In fact, cannot be the same man. He may have repented. He may have brooded over it the whole night. He may have thought to come to you and apologize. He may be coming to apologize. But you cannot see. Your eyes are clouded with anger. And your anger will color the reality. Even if he tries to apologize, you will think that he must be trying to deceive you, or he has become afraid of your vengeance, or he is a very cunning man, beware. He is trying to cheat you, deceive you. Now he is trying to befriend you, and again someday he will bring some trouble to you. Now all these thoughts will be there. You will not be able to see what he is. You will miss the reality. And there is every possibility, seeing all these clouds on your face, He may have come to apologize, he may not apologize. Seeing that you are in a rage, you will not understand. He may change his own ideas. Because we affect each other. And if he changes, certainly your ideas are confirmed. They become even more strong. This is how things are happening. A man who has clarity never carries the past. He simply looks into reality with no interference from the past. That is the meaning of this story. Dropping the memory means dropping the mind. Dropping the mind means dropping the whole world. Dropping the mind means dropping the ego. Then you are no more self-centered. Then you don't have any mind whatsoever. Then you live a life with no mind of your own. That is the meaning of Tao. Then God's mind functions through you. You don't have your own mind. You function. But now you don't function from your own center. Now the center of the whole becomes your center. You act, but you are not the doer anymore. God acts. Your surrender is total. Just the other day I was reading a beautiful Hasidic parable. A young man asked an old rabbi that in the past we have heard, in the old golden days, people used to see God with their own eyes. People used to encounter God. God used to walk on earth. God used to call people by their name. God was very close. What has happened now? Why God is not so close? Why we cannot see him directly? Why he is hiding? Where he has gone? Why he has forgotten the earth? Why he does not walk anymore on the earth? Why he does not hold the hands of people stumbling in darkness? He used to do that before. The old rabbi looked at the disciple and said, "My son, he is still there where he used to be. Only man has forgotten how to stoop down so low that he can see him. To stoop down. Man has forgotten. Man is standing very haughty. Man is standing very proud. Man is standing very erect. Man is standing separate from God. Man has become an island. Man is no more part of the universal, part of the whole. That's why God is exactly where you used to be. He is still trying to hold your hand, but you are not willing. He is still confronting you, but you look sideways. He is still there, calling you by your own name, but you are so much full of your own noise, the inner talk, the continuous chattering. You have become a chatterbox. That's why. And man has forgotten to stoop, to bow down. In the East, bowing down has been always a very significant gesture. The disciple goes to the master, bows down, lies down flat on the earth. That is a gesture of surrender. He says, "I am no more." He says, "I will not exist anymore as myself. Now I will be a vehicle. I will be passive. You pour, and I will be a womb. You pour, and I will be a receptacle. I will not fight. I surrender." in that surrender, something of tremendous value happens. With the master, you start learning the ABC of surrender. Then one day, when you have learned what surrender is, you try with God. The master is just a kindergarten, just a beginning, the beginning of surrender. When you have learned the joy of it, the beauty of it, the benediction of it, then you want to go to the deeper seas. You have learned swimming on the banks. Now you would like to go to the farthest point. Then God is available. But if you exist as you, if you exist as a self, then it is impossible. Then you exist as an ego. This ego is what this parable means by memory. These Taoist parables are very subtle. Now let us go into it. In the Middle Age, Hua Tzu of Yangli in Sung lost his memory. That's a way of saying that became a meditator. That's a Taoist expression, lost his memory. It means became a non-individual. It means became a non-ego. It means became loose from the grip of the mind. Drop the weight of the past. It is not something to condemn, remember. It is a great appreciation. In Taoist circles, when somebody says, somebody has lost his memory, he is praising the man, remember. Taoists have their own way of saying things. Very peculiar ways of saying things. But profound is the meaning of their gestures. In the Middle Age, Hua Tzu of Yangli in Sung lost his memory, became a no mind, forgot all about his past, forgot all about that has happened, as if dropped all the dust from the mirror. Came to exist in the present, that's what it means. Is no more in the past, does not exist through the past, does not function through the past, has started function immediately, moment to moment. He lives now, not gathering, not accumulating, not hoarding any knowledge, any information. Whatsoever the totality brings in the moment is all. Feels hungry, looks for food, but has no idea about any food that he has eaten before. And the moment his appetite is fulfilled, forgets all about it. Then does not carry the idea in the mind. Has no fantasy about food, either before or after. The moment is all. The now and the here is all. There is no then and there is no there. This is the first satori. When man becomes loosened from the grip of the past, the hold of the past, as if a snake has slipped from the old skin, has become absolutely new. As if in the fall, a tree has dropped all old leaves. New leaves have sprouted. The moment something becomes old, a moment old, is dropped immediately. One goes on slipping again and again into the present. A totally new style of life, the way of Tao, the way of Zen, the way of Sannyas. Watch it in your own life. How do you live? Do you again and again bring the past in? Do you always live through the past? Is your life too much colored by the memory? Then you are living the worldly life. To live in the memory is to live in the world, samsara. To live without memory is to live in God. To live without memory is to live in nirvana, enlightenment. Remember, by saying that Huatazu lost his memory, you should not translate it as if he became absent-minded. No, that is not the meaning of it. To become absent-minded is totally a different thing. That is a disease. Memory persists but becomes distorted. You know, but you don't know clearly. An absent-minded person is not a man of Tao. An absent-minded person is simply absent-minded. The man of Tao is very much present. He is not absent-minded. In fact, he is so much present that the memory cannot interfere. His presence is tremendous. His presence is so intense. The light of presence is so intense, the memory cannot interfere. He functions out of the presence. You function out of the memory. So when somebody becomes absent-minded, he looks as if he is ill, naturally, because he goes on forgetting. Not that he has really forgotten. He remembers that he has forgotten. The difference has to be understood. He remembers that he has forgotten. He knows that he knows, and yet he cannot remember it. That is the man who is absent-minded. I have heard many stories about Thomas Alva Edison. He was a man who can be called perfectly absent-minded. One day, he went to a restaurant, took his lunch, came out, and met a friend on the door, just on the street. Talked for a few minutes, and then the friend said, "Why don't you come with me and have your lunch?" So he said, "Right, you made me remember. I had come for my lunch." He has taken. Then they went inside the same restaurant again. The food was served. The friend asked Edison, "You look a little puzzled." Edison says, "What is the matter? I don't feel any appetite at all." And the waiter laughed and he said, "Sir, you have taken your lunch just 5 minutes before." This is absent-mindedness. Once it happens that he forgot his own name. He was standing in a queue. And when his turn came and the name was called, he started looking here and there, looking for the man whose name is being called. And then somebody who was standing behind him told him, "Sir, as far as I know, you are Edison." So for whom you are looking? And Edison says, thank you. In fact, I had completely forgotten. This is absent-mindedness. Edison is not a man of Satori. He is still in the memory, but his memory is a chaos. He cannot figure it out what is what. He is not a Buddha. He is not a Huatazu. He does not live in the moment. He is still in the past. Of course, his past is very clumsy. A clumsy past, a clumsy memory, a lousy memory is absent-mindedness. But a man who has lost his memory, in the sense Taoists use this term, is a man who functions out of the prisons of his mind. Prisons of the mind. Just a few days before, I was reading the memoirs of a very rare man. He was a saint, died few years before, lived really long, almost 140 years. His name was Shivpuri Baba, Shivpuri Baba of Nepal. In his memoirs, he tells a story. He went to Jaipur, and a very rich man gave him a box full of notes, 100 rupee notes. While in the train, he looked into the box. It was full of notes, so he wanted to know how many notes he has. So he started counting. And in the compartment, there were only two persons, Shivpuri Baba, a very old ancient man. He must have been at that time near about 120 years. And the English lady, a young woman. She became interested, this old beggar, in the first class, and carrying a whole box of 100 rupee notes. Some idea came in her mind. She jumped and she said, you give me half the money, otherwise I will pull the chain. And I will tell them that this old man tried to rape me. Shivpuri Baba laughed and showed his ears as if he is deaf. So he gave her a paper and said, write it. I cannot hear. So she wrote it, he took it in his pocket and said, now, you pull the chain. This is presence of mind. It is not functioning out of the past, because this has never happened before. And it may not happen again. But just in a flash, like lightning, a man who is really present will act out of his presence. Now, you would have been in trouble, because you would have looked into memory what to do now. You would have started groping in your memory. Is there something in the past through which you can have some idea what to do now? But in real life, nothing is ever repeated. Everything is new. That's why your responses always fall fast. You act out of the past, and the thing is absolutely new. It has never happened before. So in fact, you don't have any experience of it. Your experience may be of something similar, but it cannot be exactly about the same thing. It is not a repetition. The situation never repeats. Maybe something similar. You were cheated by somebody, something similar. You were deceived by somebody, something similar. You were threatened by somebody, something similar, but not exactly the same. So when you start looking in the memory, you are showing you don't have the presence of mind. Now, this looks like a paradox. A man of no mind is a man of presence of mind. And a man with memory, is a man who is absent. He looks in the past. The situation is here now, confronting you. It is an encounter. Right now, respond like a mirror. A mirror reflects whosoever comes in front of it. It has not to look in the memory that this man has also been before in front of me. So how to reflect him? He simply reflects. When there is no memory, it is not absent-mindedness. It is simply the mirror is clear. The dust is not there. The dust is not a distraction. The reflection will be clear. And out of that reflection will be the act. When you act out of the present moment, your act is always total. You will never feel frustrated. Two Englishmen met in London. Arthur Derrick, Carl Quincy. How are you, old chap? Fine, just fine, said Derrick. Lots doing. Business grand. Children fine. Weather pleasant. And all that sort of boulder death. Jolly good. Anything else? Let me see. Ah, yes. Buried my wife. Really? Had to. Dead, you know. Now, this man is an absent-minded man. Not that he has lost his memory. He has a lousy memory. Remember the distinction. Sometimes they may look like the same. They are not. This story is about a man who lost his memory. Who lost his mind? Who lost his past? Who became unburdened? To say it in Christ's words, who became a child again? Became capable of entering into the kingdom of God. But to his family, to his friends, he must have posed a great problem. Naturally. They must have thought that what has happened to this old man? A calamity. They must have thought that he has fallen in deep sleep, a sort of sleep. Now, exactly the contrary is the case. They are asleep. This man has awakened out of his sleep. But they can understand only the language of his sleep. They must have thought this man has fallen asleep. A big city sarpi made a wrong turn and found himself helplessly lost in the sticks of Kentucky. After bouncing along a rocky country road for more than an hour, he reached a large intersection. There, standing on the side of the road, was the old looking hillbilly. "Hey fellow," he shouted, "could you tell me where the road on the right leads to?" "I don't rightly know," the country boy answered slowly. "Well, then I wonder if you can tell me where the road on the left would take me." But again the boy shook his head. "I don't rightly know that either." A little perturbed, the city fellow barked, "You are not too bright, are you?" "Maybe not," drawled the hillbilly, "but I ain't lost." But this old man, who I presume must have been thought by others, he is lost. He has changed so diametrically. He has changed so tremendously that the whole village, the relatives, the friends, the family, the sons, the daughters, the wife, they must have become very much worried what to do with this man. He would receive a present in the morning and forget it by the evening. Really became a child. That is the quality of innocence. Give a present in the evening and forget it by the morning. In the street he would forget to walk. At home he would forget to sit down. Today he would not remember yesterday. Tomorrow he would not remember today. This is not absent-mindedness. He is simply no more gathering the past. It is not a lousy memory. He is cut away from memory utterly. It is like a child. You are angry with the child and the child is angry with you. And look at his face. He is so angry and so red that he would like to kill you. And he says, "Never again I will talk to you. Finished." And the next moment, he is again sitting in your lap and talking beautifully. He has forgotten. In a rage, whatever he has said, he has not carried it. It has not become a luggage in his mind. Yes, in the spur of the moment he was angry, he said something. Now the anger is gone, and gone all that he had said in that moment. He has not become committed to it forever. It was a momentary flare up. A ripple. But he is not frozen in it. He is a flowing phenomenon. The ripple was there, a wave had arisen, now it is no more. He is not going to carry it always and always. Even if you make him remember, he will laugh. He will say all nonsense. He will say, "I don't remember." "Is it so?" he will say. "Had I really said that?" "Impossible," he will say. "How I can say that? You must have imagined." But it was a flare-up. This has to be understood. A man who lives moment to moment is sometimes angry, sometimes happy, sometimes sad. But you can depend on him. He will not carry these things forever. A man who is very controlled and does not allow any emotion to arise in his being is very dangerous. You insult him and he is not angry. He holds it. By and by he will accumulate so much anger that he is going to do something really nasty. A momentary flare of anger is nothing wrong. It is beautiful in a way. It simply shows that the man is still alive. A momentary flare up simply shows that the man is not dead. that he responds to situations and responds authentically. When he feels that the situation is such, anger is needed, the anger is there. When he feels the situation is such, happiness is needed, happiness is there. He moves with the situation. He has no prejudice far or against. He has no ideology as such. He has not a certain idea that you should not be angry whatsoever the situation. You have to remain non-angry. If a man tries to be non-angry that way, what he will do, he will repress his anger. And sometimes that anger will come out of all proportions in situations where it will look almost mad. He will be capable of murdering somebody or committing suicide or doing something really harmful, because so much anger when released is much poison. It is destructive. Ordinary anger has nothing wrong in it. In fact, a person who can become angry and forget all about it next moment is really a very good person. You will always find him friendly, alive, loving, compassionate. A man who is always holding his emotions, controlling and controlling and controlling, a man of so-called discipline, is never a good person. He will always show that he is holier than you. But his anger you can see in his eyes. You can see in his face. You can see in his every gesture. The way he walks, the way he talks, the way he relates with people, you can see always there. The anger is there, boiling. And he is ready to burst any moment. These are the murderers. These are the criminals. These are the real evildoers. And even if he goes on controlling, all his control will make his ego more and more strong. Now, ego is far more dangerous than anger. Anger is human. Nothing wrong about it. It is simple. It is simply a situation in which you are provoked and you are alive, so you respond to it. It is saying that I will not yield. It is saying that this is not a situation I can accept. This is a situation I want to say no. It is a protest. Nothing wrong in it. I am not against anger. I am against accumulated anger. I am not against sex. I am against accumulated sexuality. Anything that is in the moment is good. Anything that is carried from the past is bad, is disease, is illness. Now this man became like a child. Today he would not remember yesterday, tomorrow he would not remember today. Jesus says to his disciples, "Think not of the morrow. Look at the lilies in the field, how beautiful they are. They don't think of the past, they don't think of the future. They are not worried at all what is going to happen and what has happened. They simply live here now. That is their beauty. That is the beauty of the trees and the rocks and the stars and the rivers. And the whole existence is beautiful because it has no past. Man is ugly. the past makes him ugly. Except man, nobody is ugly. Because it is only man who goes on brooding about the past and the future and goes on missing the life that is available in the present. And that is the only life there is, the only dance there is. Naturally, you become ugly because you have no opportunity to live authentically.
I have heard a beautiful anecdote.
The man was talking with his friend, the tailor, about hunting trips. Once, said the tailor, I was in Africa hunting lions. I discovered one standing 10 feet away. And there I was without my gun. The lion came closer, now he was only 5 feet away. What happened? The man asked breathless. Well, to make a long story short, he leaped up and killed me. What? What do you mean he killed you? The man asked. You are sitting here very much alive. Ha, said the tailor. You call this living? Even people who look alive are not really alive. They have been killed, and not once, many times. Killed by the past, the line of the past. Killed by the future, the line of the future. And they are being killed every day. They are being murdered every day by these two enemies. There is a beautiful Buddhist parable of many meanings. And all the meanings are beautiful. Today, try to understand it in one certain meaning. A man is running, escaping from a lion, and the lion is following him and chasing him in the forest. Then the man comes to a precipice. There is no other way. He stops. For a single moment, he cannot understand what to do. He looks down. It is a very deep valley, a great abyss. If he jumped, he is gone. But if still there is a possibility, miracles happen. So he looked closely down. There, deep in the valley, two more lions are standing and looking up. So even that possibility is no more. And the lion is coming close by and he is roaring. And he can hear the roar. So the only way possible is he hangs with the roots of a tree in the valley. He cannot jump. He cannot stand on the precipice. He clings, holds the roots of a tree. The roots are very fragile. And he is afraid any moment they will be broken. Not only that, it is a very cold evening. Night is gathering. And the sun is going down. And his hands are so cold that he is afraid he will not be able to hold for long. Already the roots are slipping out of his hands. They are frozen. Now death is certain. Now each moment there is death. And then he looks. Two mice are cutting the roots of the tree. One is white and one is black. The symbol of day and night. The symbol of time. The time is running fast. And the two mice are cutting the roots. So any moment they will do that job, and they are really doing a great job. They are almost at the end. They are just going to finish. Maybe it is evening and they have to also to go and rest. So they are finishing the last thing. Any moment the root will be broken from the tree. And then he looks up, and on the tree there is a hive of bees, and the honey is dropping, and he forgets all. And he tries to catch a drop of honey on his tongue, and he succeeds, and the taste is really sweet. Now, this parable has many meanings. I have talked about this parable in different meanings. This time, this parable, I would like to indicate to a certain meaning. This moment, in the past, one line is coming. In the future, two lines are waiting. Time is running fast. Death is very close by, as it is always. Day and night, the two mice cutting the roots of very life. Still, if you can live in the present, the taste is tremendously sweet. It is really beautiful. And the man lived in the moment and forgot all. And for that moment there was no death, no lines, no time, nothing existed. Only the sweet taste of honey on his tongue. That is the way to live. That is the only way to live. Otherwise you will not be living. Each moment, this is the situation. The parable is really very existential. This is the situation. You are the man clinging with the root of a tree, surrounded from everywhere by death and time running fast. Any moment he will drop into death and disappear. Now what to do? To worry about the past? To worry about the future? To worry about death, to worry about time, what to do, or to enjoy this moment. Think not of the morrow means let this moment become a drop of sweet honey on your tongue. Even though death is life is beautiful, even though past was not very good, and who knows about the future, may not be very good. As things are, it is hopeless to hope. But this moment is beautiful. Look, this moment, let me become a drop of honey on your tongue. This moment is tremendously beautiful. What is missing? What is lacking? If you can be in the moment, that is the meaning of this Taoist expression, Hua Tazu lost his memory. His family were troubled about it and invited a diviner to tell his fortune, but without success. They invited a summon to perform an auspicious rite, but it made no difference. They invited a doctor to treat him, but it did no good. Now that is beautiful and meaningful. It was not a disease, so no doctor can cure it. Had it been a disease, then the doctor could have cured it. It was not anything physical. The man was perfectly healthy. In fact, he has never been so healthy as he must have been at that time. When you forget about your past, you forget all about your illnesses also. The past is the reservoir of all illnesses. When you forget the past, you are neither young nor old. You simply are. And that is the moment of being healthy and whole. The man must have been very healthy. So what doctors can do? The family called the doctors, but they could not treat him. It was not a disease. A disease can be treated. This was not a disease. And the family asked a diviner to tell his fortune, but without success. Because a man who has no memory has no imagination for the future. And a man who has no imagination for the future is unpredictable. You cannot predict anything about him. He is just open. Ordinarily, men are predictable because they have a certain projection in the future, some idea about the future, a seed for the future. That seed one day will sprout. That's how the diviners, the palmists, the fortune tellers live. They live on your imagination. You go to a fortune teller. He will look at your hand and he will say, great is the possibility. Money will come, but will not stay. It can be said about anybody, except like a man like me. You cannot say that. But it can be said about anybody, money will come. Everybody hoping. Who will deny that it will not come? Yes, that's what he has come to the fortune teller to be approved, to be confirmed. Money will come, but you will not be able to keep it. Who has ever been able to keep money? Money comes and goes. In fact, money exists only between coming and going. If you are able to keep it, it is no more money. You can keep 1,000 notes in your house. You can hoard it underground, but it is no more money. You could have kept stones there, it was all the same. The money exists only between coming and going. When somebody gives you 100 rupee note, when the note changes the hands, then it is money. Just for a moment it is money, when it changes the hands. Then that man is getting something out of it, and you are getting something out of it. When you will give it to somebody else, again it will be money. That's why notes are called currency. Currency means movement. They should move. The more they move, the more there is money. That's why in America money is more. In India it can never be more. So much movement. Everybody is spending. Spending that one has, spending even that which one hopes one day he will have. People are purchasing cars and fridge and everything on installment basis. Someday they hope they will have money and then they will pay. But they are purchasing right now. In America, money is really there. Because people have come to know money is in the movement. Let money change hands. As much it changes hands, the country becomes richer and richer and richer. Let 100 rupee notes circulate here. If we are 500 people and 100 rupee notes goes changing hands, it becomes 500 notes of 100 rupees. Because each time it will come to one person, he will have 100 rupees. Keep one person, let one person keep it, then this group will be poor. Then only one person has 100 rupee notes. If it had changed and gone, moved, then everybody would have enjoyed 100 rupees. Of course, there must have been much wealth. But these predictions are possible only about people who have an idea of the future. There is a story. When Buddha became enlightened, he was going on the bank of a river, and an astrologer who was coming from Banaras has become a great scholar of astrology and was coming home with all the degrees and diplomas that were available in those days. And suddenly he saw the footprints of Buddha on the sand. And he could not believe his eyes, because in his books it was said, such a footprint is only that of a man who has conquered the whole world. Chakravartin. One who is the emperor of the whole world, all the 6 continents. So why an emperor of all the 6 continents should come in a hot afternoon to walk on this poor river? And to walk on the hard sand without shoes, impossible. He became very much puzzled. And he is just now fresh from Benares. And this seems the first encounter is undoing his whole doing. So either his science is wrong, or what has happened? Why the emperor should come here? So he followed the footprints. Buddha was sitting under a tree. Looking at the Buddha, he became even more puzzled. A beggar. And his puzzlement was even more, because he looked like an emperor. His face, the grace, the peace. He had seen emperors. In fact, nobody had looked more emperor-like than this man. But his clothes, and the way he was sitting under the tree, and not even a servant around. He went to Buddha and he said, "Sir, it is very decisive for me. Allow me to disturb you. Just a single thing you have to tell me. Because my whole life will depend on it. I am carrying all these books. I am coming from Benares. 20 years I have wasted for studying astrology. And here you are sitting, disturbing my whole knowledge. So either you tell me that astrology is useless so I can throw these books in the river and go back home and forget all about it. Or tell me what has happened, because these footprints are the footprints of a Chakravartin, the emperor who rules the whole world, the greatest emperor, who is the ruler of all the 6 continents. All the indications are there. And what you are doing here?" Buddha laughed and he said, "You need not throw your books, you can take them home. You will not come across a man like me very easily again. Don't be disturbed. The people that you will meet, you will be able to predict." Yes, it is true. About me, you cannot predict anything because I have gone beyond mind. All predictions are below mind. People who live in the mind are predictable. This is significant. People who live below mind are predictable. People who live in the mind are predictable because they are mechanical. You can say what they will do tomorrow. Because they will repeat. Nothing new is going to happen. They will simply repeat their past. But a man who has gone beyond mind is unpredictable, because he will never repeat anything. So you cannot have any clue from his past to predict. So the diviners failed. They could not say anything about this man. And the summon was called, but he also could not do anything. The summon can only do one thing. He can pray. He can do certain rituals to help. But a man who has gone beyond mind needs no prayer. No prayer will be of any help to him. In fact, prayer means asking God to do something. Literally, asking God to do something for you. A man who has gone beyond mind has become part of God. There is nobody to pray and nobody to be prayed to. Who is there to ask? Only God is. No, these auspicious rites and rituals were of no help. So nobody could help. There was a confusion of Lu, who, acting as his own go-between, claimed that he could cure it. Huatazu's wife and children offered half of their property in return for his skills. Now, Confucians are the first behaviorists of the world. Pavlov and B.F. Skinner are nothing but their disciples. Confucius says, a man's behavior can be changed, manipulated, through punishment and reward. That's the whole technique that has been used down the ages by the moralists. You reward the child if he follows your idea. You punish the child if he goes against you. By punishment and reward, by and by, you condition his mind. All minds are conditioned. And what Maoists are doing in China today is very ancient in China. Confucius has taught it very well. The idea has to be understood. The idea is that a man can be manipulated if you torture him or you reward him. Through greed and fear, a man can be manipulated. That's what you have been doing to your children. That's what has been done to you by your parents and by your society. What you are doing to criminals in your prisons, torturing them, trying to condition their mind. Why the priest goes on talking about the hell and heaven? What is the idea of hell and heaven? Just the simple idea of punishment and reward. If you follow the priest, you will be rewarded in heaven. If you don't follow the priest, you will be punished in hell. And they have painted the hell in such colors that anybody will become afraid. Anybody will have a trembling. And then one starts holding oneself, repressing oneself. This Confucian said that he can cure. Now, the first thing is, the man was not ill. So to say that he can be cured is stupid. But the same stupidity continues, even now. There are many people in Western countries who are not mad, but are being cured by psychologists. Who are not really mad, in fact, have gone a little higher than ordinary men. Who are what Sufis call mastas, who have become mast, drunk with God. But they are being treated. And what is their treatment? Electroshock. Beating. Torturing. In 1001 ways. Electroshock is a torture. The latest invention to torture man. They are put into asylums. Forced to live a very routine life. And many of them are farther ahead than ordinary humanity. Many of them have achieved a better consciousness, but naturally they have fallen separate from the ordinary humanity. And the normal seems to be the rule. The normal seems to be the healthy person. The normal is not the norm, remember. Normal simply means the crowd. The mob, the mass. The mass is not healthy and the mass is not in any way sane. In fact, no individual has been so insane as the behavior of the masses proves. Masses are more insane. No Hindu is as insane as the Hindu society. No Muslim is so insane as the Muslim society. The Muslim mob can go and burn the temples and kill Hindus. Ask each individual of that crowd and you will not find any individual who is so worse. Every individual will say that somehow it happened, I was just there and became joined with the crowd. It was not good. Ask each individual and it was not good, you will be said, but the crowd did it. The crowd has been the insane always. The wars, the conflicts between religions, nations, these are all just crowd minds. Crowd mind is insane, but the psychologist, the psychiatrist, the psychoanalyst tries to adjust a person if somebody goes a little beyond. Huatazu, if Freud was available, must have been psychoanalyzed. If Skinner was there, then must have been reconditioned. That's what this Confucian said. He said, the Confucians told them, this is clearly not a disease which can be divined by hexagrams and omens, or charmed away by auspicious prayers, or treated by medicines and the needle. I shall try reforming his mind, changing his thoughts. There is a good chance that he will recover. He said that I will recondition, reform. I will recondition his mind. How you recondition a mind? You start torturing the body. When the body is tortured, the consciousness that was flying high has to come down to look after the body. Literally. You exist in the body. The body is your vehicle. If your body is harmed, naturally you cannot fly very high. You have to come back to protect the body. That's the way to recondition. And the same he did. Then the Confucian tried stripping Huatazu. It may have been winter and he will strip him naked. Naturally, when he will start shivering, suddenly the mind will come back that you are shivering, Huatazu. Find out your clothes. And he will start finding clothes. And he looked for his clothes. The Confucius tried starving him. And he looked for food. Tried setting him up in the dark and he looked for light. His consciousness was flowing higher than the mind. Now if you torture the body, the consciousness has come back to the body. Have you observed it? A small thorn in your feet and your consciousness will go there. A small thorn. But the consciousness has to go there. It is a safety measure. Otherwise the thorn will become poisonous, will become septic. It is part of your life survival mechanism that the consciousness has to go there and look after it and take the thorn out. When the thorn is there, you forget everything. Have you not washed it? Your teeth hurts. Then you forget everything. Then your whole consciousness gathers around the teeth. That pain has to be first tackled. You have a headache. Then everything is forgotten. When you have a headache, somebody may be playing beautiful music, but you cannot hear. Somebody may be dancing, but you cannot look. There may be beauty all around, but how can you look at the beauty? You are not free. Your headache is pulling you down into the body. This is what the Confucian follower did. He starved the man, stripped him naked, put him in the dark. Naturally, he started looking for light, looking for warmth, for clothes, and looking for food. The Confucian was delighted. and told the man's sons the sickness is curable. But my arts have been passed down secretly through the generations and are not disclosed to outsiders, so I shall shut out his attendants and stay alone with him in his room for 7 days. They agreed. The art is not much of a secret. The art is simply to threaten the man with death, either to beat him or jump on his chest with a spear. So the man is threatened to death. In that moment, one has to come to his body back. And when one comes to one's body, the mind starts functioning again, because mind is part of the body. Mind is a subtle mechanism of the body. This man, Huatazu, has lost his contact with the mind, but the mind is there. Mind is always there. Even when a person goes beyond mind, the mind remains there, dormant, sleepy in the body. If you are pulled back into the body, the mind is stirred again and it starts functioning. They agreed, and no one knew what methods the Confucian used. But the sickness of many years was completely dispelled in a single morning. When Huatazu woke up, he was very angry. Now, in fact, he was awake all this time. Now he has fallen asleep. But to the Confucian mind, or to the ordinary mind of humanity, it seems as if he woke up, as if he has fallen asleep. When Huatazu woke up, he was very angry, naturally. What is sleep to us was not asleep to him. It used to happen in Ramakrishna's case many times, singing the song of Kali, dancing before Kali, he will fall and will become unconscious. Unconscious to us. To himself he will become superbly conscious. But for the outside he was almost in a coma. If you had asked psychoanalysts, they will say this is hysteria, a hysterical fit. If you go to the psychiatrist and ask about Ramakrishna, they will prove that he was neurotic. They have done the same to Jesus. So they will not leave your Ramakrishna alone. Jesus is neurotic, they say. Ramakrishna would have been even more neurotic to them. For 6 days sometimes he will remain unconscious. Unconscious to us, let me remind you again and again. To himself he was superbly conscious. In fact, he was so conscious within himself that his whole consciousness was involved there, and from the outside all consciousness was taken inside. It came to the center. That's why on the outside he was unconscious. You are conscious on the outside because in the inside you are unconscious. In the deepest core of your being you are fast asleep and snoring. That's why you look so awake on the outside. Things change when a man like Ramakrishna moves into his core. On the outside he falls asleep, in the inside he becomes awake. To us it seems he has forgotten all, to him it seems he has remembered all. When Huatazu woke up, he was very angry, and the same used to happen to Ramakrishna. People will try to bring him back. Naturally, the disciples will become very much afraid. Will he come back or not? And they will massage his feet with ghee and camphor. And they will massage his head, and they will massage his whole body, and they will try to bring him back somehow. Sometimes, even the disciples will do something which looks ugly and cruel. They will suffocate him by closing his nose. Because when the body is suffocated and the great need for air arises, the consciousness has to come back. Or sometimes they will burn very bitter things around him and the smoke will go into his nose and he will suffer terribly and he will start moving, moaning, and then he will come back. And they were disciples, not enemies. But sometimes you can do harm even while you are thinking you are doing good. When he will come back, he will start crying. And the disciples will ask why you are crying, and he will say, what have you done? Why you have brought me back? I was so tremendously happy inside. I was in a totally different world. I was in the world of God. God was very much present. I was soured by bliss. Why you have brought me back? Let me go again. When Huatazu woke up, he was very angry. Naturally, obviously. He dismissed his wife, punished his sons, and chased away the Confucian with his spear. Maybe that was the same spear that the Confucius, the follower of the Confucius, has used to threaten him to death. The authorities of Sung arrested him and wanted to know the reason. Formerly, when I forgot, said Huatazu, I was boundless. I did not notice whether heaven and earth existed or not. Now suddenly I remember, and all the disasters and recoveries, gains and losses, joy and sorrows, loves and hates of 20 or 30 years past rise up in a 1,000 tangled threads. I fear that all the disasters and recoveries, gains and losses, joy and sorrows, loves and hates still to come will confound my heart just as much. Shall I never again find a moment of forgetfulness? What do you think is remembering is forgetfulness for a man who has arrived home? What to you looks like forgetfulness is really remembering for a man who has awakened into his soul. Remember this paradox. The languages are different. You are asleep, but you think this is awakening. This you think is a state of awareness. You mistake. Hence, when a person becomes really aware, looks to you as if he has fallen asleep. You are too much self-conscious. So when a person loses his self and really becomes conscious, you think he has gone mad. It appears as if he is ill. He has become whole. He has become healthy. The man said, I was boundless formerly when I forgot. There was no boundary to me. There was no definition to me. I was all. I was whole. I was one with the universe. Nothing separated me. I was in a tremendous unity. Unio mystica. There was oneness. And it was beautiful and it was a benediction. Now, suddenly I remember all the disasters and recoveries, gains and losses, joys and sorrows, loves and hates of 20 or 30 years past rise up in 1,000 tangled threads. Now I am back to madness. The whole past again opening its doors. It is a nightmare. And now he has tasted few moments of forgetfulness or self-remembering. Now he is in a state to compare, that's why he is angry. You cannot compare because you have not experienced anything beyond the past, beyond memory, beyond mind. You have never tested anything, not a single drop of no mind. That's why you cannot compare. This will happen one day if you continue meditating. One day, suddenly you will see you have taken off from the mind. The airport of the mind is left far behind. You are soaring high in the sky. Then for the first time you will say, how beautiful life is, how beautiful existence is. You will feel tremendously grateful. Then to come down back to the mind, you will feel as if you are getting back into the madhouse. The memory is a madhouse. Everything is rising in a thousand tangled threads. I fear that all the desistances and recoveries, gains and losses, joy and sorrows, loves and hates, is still to come will confound my heart just as much. And this is past. And now the future is coming. And I will be burdened more and more because the past will grow every day. Shall I never again find a moment of forgetfulness? In that forgetfulness, you come home. In that forgetfulness, you remember. In that forgetfulness, you become for the first time aware. In that forgetfulness, you are in the present. Here now, you enter eternity. That forgetfulness is the door to eternity. Kabir has said, when I was, God was not. Now I am not and God is. Kabir has said, when I used to think, I used to miss. Now I have forgotten how to think and all is available. First I used to seek and there was only frustration and frustration. Now I am no more there to seek and he is there seeking for me. I have forgotten all. And in that very forgetfulness, I have remembered. To forget means to forget the world. To forget means to forget the non-essential. To forget means to forget the dust. And to remember the mirror. To remember consciousness. The mind is continuously fabricating, imagining. The mind is a liar. It goes on lying to you. The lie is that it gives you something which is not real. Something which looks like real but is not real. Are you still not fed up with it? A man becomes religious when he is fed up with the mind. Listen to this small anecdote. Why should I buy that much for 20 bucks? The TV producer asked the agent. Because he is a talking dog, said the agent. Listen, I am sick and tired of that talking dog routine, said the producer. Take the much and get lost. Suddenly the dog jumped up on the producer's desk. Please sir, I know I don't look like the most attractive dog in the world, but it is not my fault. My present master never feeds me. He is a cheap, conniving, dishonest agent. This man has made a fortune booking me into the largest theaters and concert halls in the world. I have entertained kings and noblemen, presidents and premiers. I assure you, if you buy me, I will make you
500,000 the very first year. The producer was amazed at the Das fluency, his power of his speech, his intense projection. This dog talks like a Harvard graduate. He said, "Why do you want to sell him to me for $20? Have you gone mad?" "Because," said the agent, "I am fed up with his constant lying." The mind is a lying mechanism. It never allows you to see the truth. Either it is lying about the past or it is lying about the future. And remember, even about the past, whatsoever you memorize, remember, it is not true. It is touched up. It is very much created again and again by the mind. Much is dropped, much is added, and the mind goes on touching it every day. You can never be certain with the mind. Mind is a lying mechanism. When a person is really fed up with this mechanism, then the turn, the conversion, the quantum leap becomes possible. This parable is about the mind and how, because of the mind, we have forgotten God, we have forgotten Tao. This parable says, unless you get out of the mind, you will never be able to know the truth. If you want to know the truth, there is no other way than to get out of the mind. That's what meditation is all about. How to get out of the mind. How not to allow the mind to constantly interfere with reality. This is a great parable. Ordinarily, the so-called religions are nothing but moralities. They condition your mind. Tao is a process of unconditioning. The ordinary religions hypnotize your mind. Tao is a process of dehypnotization. So one simply peels the mind away, just as you peel an onion. Layer upon layer, layer upon layer, you will find. Go on peeling, go on peeling. One moment comes, nothing is left in your hands. That nothing is what Tao is. That nothing is all. What Buddha calls sunya, that nothing, that emptiness. That emptiness is the source of all. Once you have lived, touched, been in that emptiness, then only you will know how much you were missing. For the first time you will become aware that you were asleep for centuries, for lives together. Right now you are asleep. Gurdjieff used to say to his disciples that you are somnambulists, moving, walking, talking in sleep. The first thing to be done is not morality, but how to shock you into awareness. His greatest disciple was P.D. Ouspensky. P.D. Ouspensky has dedicated his book In Search of the Miraculous to his master with these words: "To Gurdjieff, to my master, who has disturbed my sleep forever." Yes, the master is there to disturb your sleep. The sleep is nothing but the mind. Mind is another name of your sleep. This is the distinction between the Confucian thought and the Laozian thought. Confucius is an ordinary moralist, a Puritan. one who believes in conditioning people, in disciplining people. Lao Tzu is a rebellious man who believes in taking people beyond all conditionings, unconditioning people. Because only in freedom God is possible. Only in utter freedom truth is possible. Seek this utter freedom. Destroy conditionings. Destroy by and by all layers that hold you down. Take off. The holy sky is yours. Even the sky is not the limit. Enough for today.